Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king, but in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of our owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief, and Joel will be doing one evening program a month here, certainly with our stations up in the eastern part of Washington, just to introduce his ministry to you, a wonderful source of information. Ordinarily, Joel does our morning program and the afternoon program every week, so we can keep up with what's really going on. And Joel will give you a unique approach to what's really taking place, the information you're not going to get through the controlled media in the United States. Well, good evening, Joel. How are you?
I'm just fine, Dr. Stan. Good to be with you.
Well, why don't you just go ahead, and what are we going to talk about first?
Well, we're going to first talk about the financial reform bill. After a marathon session of compromises and negotiation, the House and Senate conferees, there's a conference committee when they passed two different versions of the bill, finally came to conclusions that these things are very much controlled by insider operators. This is not left to chance. The people who are selected for conferees are people who will follow orders and will get done what the powers that be want them to do. From beginning to end, this bill has been crafted by the United States Treasury under Timothy Geithner. It has not been something written by Chris Dodd or anybody else in the Congress, which is the case with most of these bills that have ever written. Only independent people like Ron Paul end up putting forth legislation and writing those legislation themselves. Everyone else takes legislation that's written by the administration or by people deeper underground even than that, things that are prepared sometimes years in advance and then shopped to willing congressmen to promote. But this financial reform bill is, frankly, anything but financial reform. As I covered many times in the World Affairs Brief, this is a monster for small business, anybody who has any financial connection, because there's a huge new agency being created by the government. There are all kinds of loopholes and exceptions, so that the biggest banks, in fact, aren't under any more real control than they are presently. But the smaller institutions are. In other words, they've used this crisis as an excuse to craft a huge increase in federal power to control and regulate smaller financial institutions that have heretofore been relatively immune from oversight. And these people are not the problems. These are not the ones that have created the crisis that precipitated these bailouts. These are the people, however, who are going to be under much larger control, and much of that control is really tracking business people, all kinds of reporting requirements of every type of negotiated settlement, and every financial settlement that businesses are involved in, even non-pure financial companies. So this is a massive increase. Even the so-called consumer protection provision of these of this bill is a massive new bureaucracy and massive new reporting requirements and control requirements. Heaven help the person who is charged with a consumer flaw. It's going to be like EPA all over again, trying to control and require information from people.
And, of course, they'll make your life miserable. But basically what this is the transfer of power to the Federal Reserve System, a privately owned central bank owned by the major large banks, not by the small banks. But this whole thing is to give the very people who created the current economic problem power now over all the other banks. What they're going to be able to do is force the small banks simply out of business, and they're going to be bought up by larger banks. They're going to be bought up by larger banks, and soon you're going to end up just with a few very large banks. The people who created the current economic crisis, who control the Fed, are going to control the financial system of America, indeed, perhaps the whole world. We'll go right ahead, Joel.
Well, one of the provisions, of course, of this bill is the so-called liquidation provisions. They have the ability to liquidate any company that they feel now is in a threat of, and that means they have the ability to walk in and take control of these companies. They started out with major provisions to tax the big banks, some $50 billion, then it was down to $19 billion to be able to pay for some of this reconstruction of failed banks. But even that is being eliminated in the quest to secure votes. This House reform package was passed by the House rather quickly under the leadership of Chairman Frank. Barney Frank declared homosexual from Massachusetts as corrupt a congressman as you could get. This is the kind of insider dealer that can make the deals that the powers that be want. And, of course, he's promoting all the propaganda that this is going to rein in Wall Street, going to restrict their profits, but it's going to do none of those things. There are provisions, for example, against called the Volcker Rule, which is something, you know, they're touting that it's going to restrict the banks from engaging in risky and speculative hedge funds and derivative operations, but it does no such thing. In fact, it's been modified and crafted so that there are lots of loopholes. Essentially, all they have to do is restructure these types of investments with smaller entities under their control, and they can still get the same thing done. They just can't do it directly as much. They're limited in financial amounts. So there are some reserve requirements, but they're so minor that it really doesn't change the ball game that much. So there's an awful lot of smoke and mirrors going on about this. Even the derivatives provisions of this financial reform bill have been gutted so that they can still operate all of the type of risky derivatives that drive this this engine of speculation. And I think this is one of the most important things for your listeners to understand, is that the entire system broke down because, in fact, it was fraudulent. It was a major Ponzi scheme. You essentially took legitimate mortgages, which, as a general rule, they developed ways to package these mortgages and sell them upstream. If you don't do that, you have a problem in the sense that, you know, banks can only loan to a certain amount of their mortgage limitations, and then they have to either stop loaning until somebody else pays off the loans. But if they can market those mortgages to other people, other investors as packages, then in fact that they can begin to loan out more money.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, the Joel is simply describing how this whole fraudulent system came together. Of course, Chris Dodd from the Senate. Chris Dodd has said, Senator Dodd has said, we don't know how this bill is going to work or even many times what's in it. Now, this is supposedly the guy who wrote it, but we're just going to have to see how it works once it starts working, you know. And, of course, Congressman Barney Frank, he was the fellow who gave us the TARP legislation, the $750 billion that was supposed to have gone to Main Street to stop this whole economic breakdown. And Henry Paulson demanded the money. And so Henry Paulson said, this money is for Main Street. It's not for Wall Street. So Barney Frank wrote the bill, $750 billion to be given to Henry Paulson with no restrictions. He could not be criticized. Nothing could be done to limit what he did. He had total use of that $750 billion that was to be used to bail out Main Street. But Barney Frank forgot to put that in the legislation. So when the money was appropriated for Henry Paulson, after promising he was going to use it to stop the cascade of home foreclosures, Henry Paulson changed his mind the next day and gave the money to Wall Street so they could begin lending money to get the economy moving. The whole idea was Wall Street, we're going to give the money to Wall Street, and then the Wall Street banks are going to lend money and we'll stop the cascading foreclosures of the companies cutting back. But Henry Paulson, when he gave the money to the banks, forgot to tell them they were supposed to lend the money to American corporations. So the major banks lent money to China and to Dubai and to India and to Spain, but they forgot they were supposed to lend any money here in the United States, and they stopped lending money to major corporations in the United States. Now, how could Barney Frank have made such a terrible mistake? He forgot to put in the legislation what Henry Paulson was to do with the $750 billion. How could Henry Paulson have been so stupid he didn't tell the banks that they were giving this money to lend, but they were supposed to lend it to American companies, not to foreign companies? How could these people who are running our country be so stupid unintentionally? Or is it possible they wanted this whole thing so what they could do is create a crisis? And what's the solution? More power to the privately owned Federal Reserve System owned by a few major banks, or at least the major holdings at a few major banks. And, of course, the whole purpose of this new legislation is to begin to close down the smaller banks and to centralize more power with the major banks. Would that be a fairly good assessment, Joel?
Absolutely. I think you're too kind in your exclamation that there's stupidity involved here. This was carefully crafted, as you well know, and I'm sure you were speaking tongue-in-cheek.
Yes, I was. Go right ahead.
But, you know, this was a carefully crafted greed pyramid that was developed as it went along. For example, you know, there's only a certain percentage at any given time of the economy that can afford with certain rules to take upon mortgages. They purposely began to change the mortgage qualification rules. They developed the missions of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to expand the mortgage ability of government to buy up and to create markets for these mortgages. When that ran out, they started to open the gates to people who should never have qualified for mortgages. And when that ran out, they started to, in fact, lower the requirements so no down was required. And when the people had no down whatsoever, they provided secondary mortgages so they could provide a down payment, and then no down whatsoever with ARM or interest rate changing mortgages. They kept developing everything until they'd milked every potential buyer of a home out of America. And then they knew that the Ponzi scheme was going to collapse. Before that happened, they started to package these subprime mortgages, and in collusion with the major credit rating agencies, actual collusion, they rated these things AAA bonds, and they sold these packages of mortgages all around the world to overseas. They got European. And the only reason that they could do that is not only did they manipulate the rating agencies, but they also got the derivatives in the market involved in the hedge fund markets into creating credit default swaps, a form of insurance policy, allowed them to say that we'll guarantee these things if they default. So, sure, they're subprime mortgages. You're buying them for a good price, and they're guaranteed. You pay a premium on these things. But the whole thing was a Ponzi scheme because the premiums, in fact, had been paid in to provide huge bonuses that were paid out to AIG executives, Goldman Sachs, who sold a lot of these things to people. And they were riding on the raw power of saying, look at all the money, look at our bottom line in Goldman Sachs, look at the bottom line and all the profits we're making at AIG. That's what guarantees your derivative premiums. That's what guarantees. But, you know, a person buying these premiums, buying these derivatives, failed to know that they had sold so many of them, the total amount of derivatives exceeded $500 trillion. There wasn't even enough money, dollars printed or monetized within the world economy to equal or pay off $500 trillion in derivatives. It was a 100% pure Ponzi scheme. And when it began to collapse, as they knew it would, they, in fact, had bet that it would collapse and had bet on the downside, had shorted the market, so they were going to make money on the downside as well. I mean, this was just an incredible. These people should all be in jail, Dr. Stan.
Well, I think it's so important for our listeners to understand that the Goldman Sachs told the people who were going to be buying these collateralized debt obligations, these bonds made up of all these defective, fraudulent loans, they said, this is a great investment. You're going to make a lot of money. And so, of course, Goldman Sachs, you know, they're a company of well-known banking company, they wouldn't lie. And so the people bought them. First of all, they had an insurance policy on it. And secondly, they had a AAA rating. But what they didn't understand was that Goldman Sachs was actually taking out bets, derivatives, that these were going to fail. And you know what happened? They failed just like they were supposed to. And these banks on insurance companies and pension funds throughout the world lost literally hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars. And this is what precipitated the whole problem. And because I don't quite understand why these people haven't gone back and demanded payment on the insurance policies they took out, but and if those policies, they, I think some of them are, but they wound up in the courts, and the courts just are dragging their feet, so that the Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase and certainly the others that are involved in this fraudulent activity, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo, Bank of America, they're not being held responsible for the insurance companies that they policies they wrote guaranteeing these fraudulent loans.
Well, that's what happened with most of the bailout money. The most of the bailout money to AIG went to pay off the derivatives that guarantees that had failed to satisfy. That they were all, they only paid to the insiders. A lot of people lost their money and were not paid off. They simply said the bailout money doesn't go that far. So a lot of the pension funds were left hanging. But I think a lot of them, as you say, have been delayed from filing suit because of promises that they will be made whole at some time. I think even the Federal Reserve has been shoveling out some money under the table to selected people, and that's one of the reasons why they have reacted so strongly against Representative Ron Paul's planned proposal to audit the Fed every year and constantly and to get into their... to want to know exactly where all the money went. They've been adamant they don't want the Fed audited to that extent. So that provision was gutted in the Senate version of the financial reform bill that was passed. It passed the House. But it's interesting, in the conference committee, of course, they failed to reinstate Ron Paul's audit, and they brought it up as an amendment, trying to get this thing tabled, and part of that tabling amendment was to reinstate Ron Paul's full audit of the Fed. It's interesting that it went down into defeat, and the majority of people who voted against Ron Paul were co-sponsors of Ron Paul's bill to audit the Fed. Now, that proves a point that I made months ago in the World Affairs Brief when I said, I think these people are, he had over 300 sponsors in the House. I said, most of these people are jumping on this bandwagon because they want to be able to say, we joined Ron Paul in wanting to audit the Fed, but that they would betray him when the vote actually came, and that has certainly come true.
And basically, of course, a lot of people out here realize that it's the big banks on Wall Street that are behind everything, so the Congress couldn't say, well, my goodness, now we want to audit the Fed, and we voted, you know, we signed the petition along with Ron Paul, but they didn't believe it at all, and when push came to shove, whose side were they on? Were they on the side of the average individual who is being raped by this system and going to be eventually be impoverished, and they're going to destroy the value of his life savings and his pension and his annuities and his bonds? Are they going to be on the side of the average people? Are they going to be on the side of the big banks? And they were on the side of Wall Street, and they showed it here when most of them, the majority, voted against doing the audit that they had already said that they wanted. And it was all showbiz. It's known as political theater.
Well, it's interesting that the markets reacted positively to the House passage of the reform bill, and it still hasn't passed the Senate. It's in trouble there for a couple of reasons I'll go into, but incredibly, investors reacted by bidding up the stocks of big financial companies after the bill passed in the House. With the market flat or going down, shares of banks and brokers rose 2.7%. Companies most affected by the rules in this bill, supposedly affected, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, their stocks rose even further. Obviously, the insiders who are mostly working the stock market today knew that the word was out that they had dodged a bullet. Even the rating agencies, which were supposed to be reined in and curtailed and have much more financial oversight now and be made prosecutable for falsely rating things, got away, and they did just the opposite. Congress passed a bill making them immune from lawsuits against their rating system. So this is a rigged system, Dr. Stan. It just is incredibly criminal.
They call it the rich get richer and the poor get poor, and that silly sounds like a socialist. I'm not a socialist. I believe in the free enterprise system. We don't have a free enterprise system. We have a fascist system where you have a small clique of very wealthy people who are manipulating the system to increase their own power, and of course we move towards this centralization of power. It's like Edward Bellamy's book written back in the 1880s, where he talked about one day where a credit card would be as just as good stood in Europe as gold once was. They knew exactly what was going to happen in the 1880s, and they described how everything was further centralization of power until eventually we had just one great corporation that was working with government. And the corporation was government. Government was the corporation. And we're seeing that in this bill as we're centralizing all power, destroying the small banks, destroying competition, centralizing power. And where is the outcry from our media? Well, it's muted in its silence. Go right ahead, Joel.
Well, thank you. The bill is, there's going to be a lot of manipulation to try to get the bill passed in the Senate. With the death of Ted Kennedy, with the death of Senator Robert Byrd of Virginia, two reliable Democratic votes, the Democrats are too short of their 60 veto-proof majority in the Senate. So it's unclear now how they're going to overcome the Republican filibuster to pass this financial reform. Now, I suspect that they'll rely upon the old standard Republicans in name only, the liberals of the Republican Party, newly elected Scott Brown of Massachusetts, who campaigned as a conservative but really turns out to be a liberal, the two senators from Maine who are Olympia Snow, and what is the other's name?
I can't think of it. I can think of Olympia, but I don't know the other one.
But in any case, both of them are very liberal and can be depended upon by the establishment to vote their way. Senator Scott Brown is playing hard to get over the tax, the bank issue. This was supposed to be, you know, the tax that was whittled down from $50 billion to $19 billion, and even that now, that provision is being withdrawn in order to secure his vote. He made a campaign promise that he would not vote for any tax increases, and naturally this tax provision on the big banks would be passed upon to the consumers as well. You know, the Congress will never really do anything but some sneaky small tax increases on the rich here and there. Even if they have to give up on this tax increase, what's $19 billion more in deficit spending compared to $13 trillion that they've already got? So this is something that I think that we'll see pass. It's going to have massive altering effects of our financial freedom in the United States over time. I think much of what has been passed in this financial reform bill reminds me of the tactics they used to pass the Federal Reserve Act in 1913. They got together on Jekyll Island and made a pact, a conspiracy, if you will, to make it appear as if they were opposing this. There was a great deal of populist sentiment in the United States, and they felt like if the banks could pretend to be opposed to this, that everyone would say, well, gee, let's, if the banks are against it, we must be for it.
Right.
Bought into the arguments about independence of the Fed, how it wouldn't be subject to political manipulation. And what we did was hand the big banks the power to control all of our fiat money. Well, as the world reacts against fiat money, Dr. Stan, there's all kinds of cries around the Internet about the imminent collapse of the dollar. And I spend a fair amount of time in the World Affairs Brief trying to debunk this. Not that, you know, as a free market economist, as a person who believes in the Austrian tradition of free market economics, I'm well aware of the evils of fiat money. But nevertheless, I have a very practical understanding of how powerful the position of the powers to be are in their what they've done with the dollar. They've been able to inflate the dollar up to approximately $200 trillion in monetized quantity right now worldwide. And that's about five times larger than the other biggest block of currency, the euro. It's about six times larger than the pound, the British pound. There's no other currency that can compare to the quantity of dollars that have been printed and monetized. And it doesn't even count the thousands of trillions that have been made into futures contracts and derivative contracts, which have never been monetized, meaning no one's ever had to come up with the money. They've simply created money in private hands by creating contracts that they have no intention of fulfilling. Now, it's true...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead, Joel. Go right ahead.
Well, while it's true that in hedge funds and futures trainings, there's usually people on both sides, and they claim that this cancels things out, but it doesn't cancel at least half. Half of it has to be fulfilled and monetized at some point. they just keep trading these in the speculative round so that nobody actually has to come up with the money.
I think it's important. People, Joel is just saying that there are a lot of people out there that say the dollar is going to collapse and collapse very soon. Joel believes, of course, we have a problem with fiat money, but he believes that there is no way that they're going to let the dollar collapse at the present time because there's nothing else in the world that can substitute for it, at least not at the present time. Go right ahead.
That's right. For example, I mean, the euro, which already has massive problems, it's been devalued steadily against the dollar, has problems because it simply doesn't have the inflationary base that the dollar does. I mean, you'd have to print billions and billions of euros to be able to replace the dollar. What would that do to the value of the euro? It'd be in the same position as the dollar. You couldn't do the same thing with the pound. These people have no backing of this money. They talk about the euro being a strong hard money currency because the European Central Bank has so many billions of dollars in gold. But it's not gold-backed. It's important to understand that a gold-backed currency that does not have a redeemability clause, meaning that you can't turn your dollar bills or your euros in for a fixed amount of gold, is not a gold-backed currency. And that's what brought on that. First of all, that's the in the Bretton Woods Agreement, when the dollar was created as a hard money currency with fixed redeemability in gold, that is the reason. These financial powers, the people are very smart. It's the reason that they got the dollar to be accepted worldwide, even over the pound, because it was redeemable in gold. And in fact, when financial markets began to find out that the dollar was being inflated, more than the value of gold, they said, well, we'll take the gold instead of the dollars. And they started to empty the U.S. Treasury of gold. France, in particular, was turning in billions of dollars in cash that had been spent in France and was taking the gold out. And that's when Nixon imposed or shut the gold window and made it non-redeemable again. And since then, of course, the dollar's been a free-floating currency. They've been free to print. The point is that trillions of dollars had already been inflated, and the world had accepted those. It was a marvelous scheme that they pulled, because we would have had hyperinflation had all of those dollars stayed at home and inflated the prices here at home. But because they exported our inflation worldwide, we were the only company or country in the world that had the benefit of exporting inflation. Argentina went into hyperinflation. Germany, prior to World War II, went into hyperinflation because their currency, they were printing in far in excess of what other paper currencies were printing worldwide. And that's why there can't be an actual collapse of the dollar. First of all of the other currencies are printing like mad as well and running into stimulus and deficit spending. And so all of the currencies are kind of inflating more or less the generally same rate. Actually, the U.S. has been inflating in quantity higher than other currencies, but not in percentage terms because the base of U.S. inflation is so much greater. For example, Timothy Geithner inflated about $3 to $5 trillion, and if you look at $200 trillion as the base of American dollars, that's only 1.5 to 1.75%. That's hardly hyperinflation. And that's why the latest rumor by Jim Willey, the hat trick that are saying, I think, is way off base here. His theories are gaining a lot of traction among those eagerly looking for reasons why the financial powers that be and their dollar will soon fail. He says, my belief is that any new widely used gold-backed or hard asset currency embraced by major nations of the world will act as a dollar killer and usher the United States into the third world. No nation, and I say this nonsense, no nation or group of nations is going to produce a true gold-backed currency. First of all, they don't have enough gold to produce a currency that can compete with the dollar. And if holders of a gold-backed currency could trade it in for gold, they'd be busy doing that because the country would, in fact, have to be inflating it in order to pay for all the deficit spending and stimulus money that they're doing. And that would destroy a currency because it would empty out the gold and it would no longer be gold-backed. The gold-backed currency that loses all its gold is suddenly a worthless currency. So this is based upon the new Nordic euro, which is basically a trading of crude oil in Nordic euros, and everyone's supposedly signing on to that, but it's going to be no more effective than the Iran euro-based force in terms of challenging the dollar.
And so you already believe, of course, that this is more or less of a distraction, that they keep talking about this, but right now it's not realistic, that there will be another currency, at least for some time, that will replace the dollar. Would that be a fair assessment?
Well, I don't think actually that any currency is going to challenge the dollar until war comes. And the reason it will come when war is the powers that be are going to use war as their ultimate weapon to destroy the debt structure that they built, that they cannot pay off.
And of course, there's no way that they can ever pay off. I mean, there's no way we can ever pay off Social Security or Medicare or this massive trillion dollars debt that we have. It's just unpayable. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Joel Skousen, and Joel, go right ahead. We were talking about the fact that you felt that what they were going to do was, down the line, create a war, and then, of course, they could write off all the debt. We can blame it on Ahmadinejad or whoever the enemy is, Putin or the people over in China. But everybody else will be blamed, but this will allow them to just destroy the debt and start all over again. Is that your thought?
Well, it's a little more complex than that. What it really means is that since the globalist leaders in the United States and Britain are planning on inducing a Russian and Chinese war against the United States, it will most likely be nuclear. The chances are very, very high, and they know it. I mean, I think that's why they're preparing deep nuclear bunkers, not for terror strikes, because they know a major nuclear strike is coming on America. The very markets themselves and their computers will be physically destroyed. I think they'll then, in New York and Washington and other places, center for finance, and I think they'll have an excuse then to be able to come out of their bunkers and say, you know, all of the records are gone. The United States has been hit with a completely debilitating. Our military is essentially 90% wiped out. The debt's absolved. I mean, there's just no way. I mean, they'll just walk away from it. I think they have to say, we'll start all over, and I think if there is a new currency, it will start then. Because, in fact, the U.S. dollar will no longer be backed by the financial strength of the United States. Now, that's how I think it's going to turn out. I think they have to do that. There's no other solution. By the year 2020, give or take 2 or 3 years, the U.S. is going to exceed their ability to even pay the interest on the debt. That's when they reach technical bankruptcy, and thus the need for war to wipe off the debt sometime around that period. And clearly, Russia and China are building strength in their military power and their weapons of mass destruction to be able to attack the United States by that time. Meantime, there's going to be a war in Iran. It's very clear that Israel is preparing to attack Iran. They've got permission from Saudi Arabia. They're having an extreme problem with Turkey right now over the blockade in Gaza. They've lost their position to use Turkey as a basing point to get to Iran in their attack. But it's wide open in Saudi Arabia. And, of course, they can fly over Iraq, U.S.-based as well. But I think that that is not going to lead to this Third World War that I'm predicting. I think it's going to lead to a wider Middle East war where the United States and Israel as a combination will finally clean up the mess in Lebanon and Syria and other areas and kill off their enemies. In the meantime, of course, because of the devastation of their attack.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, our guest, of course, is Joel Skousen. And Joel is saying that he thinks that this major war with, of course, Russia and China will not be happening soon. Although he does think there's going to be a war, with Iran, and the United States and Israel are going to be going to war with Iran very soon. And probably it'll be a wide Middle Eastern war. But this will not be the cataclysmic war that he's anticipating. Before we go on, Joel, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get a copy of the World Affairs Brief and why they should get a copy of the World Affairs Brief. And I will comment that I do personally read this every week when it comes out. It's excellent. And I would also comment that we carry Joel's 3 books. Now, Joel has written 3 books about getting prepared for the difficult times that lie ahead. One of them is called Strategic Location or Relocation. In other words, what do you do? You don't want to be living in a major city when the structure of society begins to break down. Another is called The Safe Home and how you would secure your home or the secure home, how you would secure your home for the difficult times. And there's a third book But they are all available. Joel's books are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I will mention that since we started carrying them a couple of months ago, they're one of our best sellers. People are looking for advice as to what to do. How could I begin preparing myself? I can't leave the country, but I know difficult times are coming. We may very well begin to see the breakdown of the structure of society. What can I do to protect my family? So, Joel, first of all, I'd like you to tell our listeners how they can get a copy of the World Affairs Brief and subscribe to it. Secondly, about your books, and of course they are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Go right ahead.
Well, Stan, I think I'm going to hire you as my marketing agent. You've done a wonderful job.
Go right ahead.
I feel very privileged to have your endorsement on those things. You know, my World Affairs Brief, I hopefully try to provide a great service for people. The media is strongly manipulated by that which they don't say, more than just outright lies. It's by careful omissions of the truth. That's what I try to put back in the briefs. Got some exciting things in tomorrow's brief that's coming out. Many things we're talking about tonight in this interview. People can get a free sample copy of the brief by emailing me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. That's editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. There's also a lot of free information on the website. One of the most important features is my research staff posts on the website all the links to the top and best news stories. They go through hundreds and hundreds of web pages each day looking for these little kernels and save you all of the opportunity. I know, Stan, that you and your staff go to my website to check on that those gems that we've ferreted out, you know, the best of the, at least the conventional and the alternate news media. There's a fair amount of disinformation on the alternate news media on the Internet, and our staff and myself were very, very well prepared to try to decide where the propaganda is and where the truth is. So that's one of the great services we provide at the World Affairs Brief.
And let me just mention that I go to World Affairs Brief every morning. I go through my emails. The next thing is World Affairs Brief. Then I go to work. But doing a real service, providing the information that people need so you don't have to surf the net, and you certainly won't be taken in by a lot of the real disinformation that's up there, put in by various government agencies or the Brotherhood of Darkness to mislead conservatives and Christians about what's really going on. Go right ahead, Joel.
Well, you know, in let's take the story, for example, about the Russian spy. There's all kinds of manipulation written over this. It's not that the spies didn't exist. They did exist. These people, interestingly enough, and this is a very important point I want to make. These people were brought into the United States, inserted into the United States. They were Russian-born people, trained in their top language institutes so that they could speak either French or English or any combination of the two, almost without accents. But they were sent over here almost immediately after the so-called collapse of the Soviet Union. And this is proof, of course, that the Soviet Union never really collapsed. This was a carefully crafted deception. Yeltsin was a puppet of the communist powers to be that had gone underground, and that they're immediately beginning more espionage of the United States. Yet it's interesting, every single news outlet in the world who trumpeted to the world about the wonders of the fall of the Soviet Union, none of them have put two and two together and gone back, as I have in the World Affairs Brief, and pointed out that this is a gross contradiction of the concept that this was a true demise of communism. It was not. But what's even more interesting about this is that people like Bill Gertz, who's well-meaning and is a good person at the Washington Times, he's been induced to talk, as many reporters are, on both the right and the left. They're given insider access to government people. So he can call his sources within government and so-called get the inside scoop, and that's what he writes about in the Washington Times. The trouble is, nobody legitimately on our side in government is allowed to talk to anyone and tell the real truth. They have to tell part of the truth in order to be believable, but there's always a little curveball involved. There's always a little bit of disinformation. And so, of course, one of the things he's getting out of his source about this Russian spy ring is that all of the diplomats in the world, and especially in Moscow, are preparing for this retribution that's going to come from the Russians, that they're expecting the Russians are going to kidnap or oust several of our diplomats and then hold them hostage to trade for these spies, claiming that our government, well, all diplomats spy. I mean, this is something, this is just a theater of political theater where the United States and Russia and other governments, even Israel spies on the United States, and the U.S. spies on Israel, and Israel spies on France, and France spies on the United States. They have to, because nobody trusts each other. These people are all part of a predator game. None of these people are true democratic representatives and sincere people. Puppets may be in presidential positions, but all of the underlying bureaucracy and law enforcement, CIA, KGB, all of these people are bad actors, dark side operators, and they don't trust anybody. And so we have a world that is full of illusions, illusions that you speak so eloquently about, Dr. Stan, and this spy ring is one of those illusions. I mean, the KGB has many more deep penetrating spies than the CIA and the FBI, like Robert Hansen, and they all follow the same pattern. You know, Robert Hansen was in the FBI spying for the Soviet Union for what, how many, 12, 15 years before he was outed? And the FBI knew all about him during the entire time. Well, what good is a counter-terrorist operation if, in fact, you let him keep spying for you for year after year? There has to be an ulterior motive for doing that. There has to be an ulterior motive for outing these particular fairly harmless spies who are simply ingratiating themselves, recruiting other people, but not really, they haven't even been charged with spying. And leaving alone the real dangerous spies that they're tracking within the State Department, which has always been a nest of communist spying, within the CIA, within Los Alamos, within Sandia Laboratories. In fact, we continue to have what they call military intelligence exchanges with Russia and China, not with Taiwan, not with our allies in South Korea, not with the French, not with the British. They don't get any scientists to come over to Los Alamos and Sandia Laboratories, only the Russians and the Chinese. As you have said so many times, building the best enemies that money can buy. Well,
go right ahead.
The rumor has it from Bill Gertz, from his official, that in fact the Obama administration is looking for an excuse to release these people in exchange for a reset of good relations with Russia. Why should you be bending over backwards to have good relations with a country that is spying on you, that is attempting to, or is building and rearming to be able to attack you? I think the only credible reason and explanation for that is that, in fact, our own government, and I'm not saying that Barack Obama understands where he's headed. He's only following orders from his handlers, one of which is probably Rahm Emanuel, although the National Security Council to the president has stated they get the daily marching orders from Henry Kissinger, who is a globalist. And I think the purpose of all of this kowtowing to China, covering up for Russian rearmament, giving money and technology to these people is they're building the best enemy money can buy, that they want this world war that will justify a move into a new world order that has military power. Because if they allow our own military to be destroyed in a preemptive nuclear strike, then they have every excuse to come out of their bunkers and say the Russians and Chinese have deceived us. We didn't know this was coming. They claim innocence just like at 9/11. And you have to say, now that our military is ineffective, we'll have to band together and give military power as we rebuild to a United Nations world army to beat this new enemy, and we'll have a great patriotic war like World War II. I think that's where we're headed. And part of this is all that theater to be able to have an excuse to go back to the Russians and say, let's make up and be friends.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but there are so many really very real threats in this country, and yet they focus on a non-threat, a non-issue that's been around for almost 20 years, dating back to the fall of the Soviet Union. They're not talking about the Islamic terrorist training camps in this country, and these people are being prepared, ready to create civil unrest when, of course, we go to war, I believe, with Iran. But we're not going to talk about those. They know what's going on, but you will never see is mentioned by ABC, CBS, NBC, or any of the major media that belong to the Brotherhood of Darkness, which is orchestrating the political theater which we're seeing today. Go right ahead.
Well, that's true. The whole war on terror is, in fact, a major propaganda organization. I mean, there is more terror against the United States today than there ever was before 9/11, because we are out there supposedly trying to kill the terrorists and killing so many innocent civilians in the process. Every time we do, we create whole families that hate the United States, and many of their siblings and children start to join the terrorist forces. But we're busy instigating conflict and killing innocent civilians in Pakistan and Afghanistan, and what we're going to do to Iran and a massive attack there is going to be truly devastating as well. There's also provocations going on at various levels within the country, at the G20, really very little accomplished. Everyone was pontificating in the G20 about cutting their deficit following the pledge of Barack Obama to cut the U.S. deficit in half within 2 years. Everyone's promising to cut their deficits in half by 2013. I mean, this is just ludicrous. Nobody follows up on that. I mean, remember when Barack Obama was campaigning, he was going to cut the deficit in half, and now it's up to 2 years from now. And when 2 years from now comes, it will be 4 years in the future. There will be another crisis. People won't even remember about those promises. But even as the world rightfully looks at the proper role is to cut deficit spending and start living within their means because of the backlash against the Greece debt default and the soon-to-default debt in Portugal and Spain, Timothy Geithner is rallying the troops to go into more deficit spending. It's a real battle between the Keynesians and the Austerians, as Peter Schiff calls it, the people who believe in austerity. And the Austerians are going to lose. But one of the most incriminating things about the G20 things was the attack of police on the demonstrators. And we find out once again, as it happened in 2007, in Montebello, in Canada, when they had a globalist meeting, when there were protesters there, that they had agent provocateurs who were part of the police that were part of actually probably making up all of those that they call the dressed in black and that have masks on them. A lot of these people, if not all of them, turn out to be police agent provocateurs. The proof came in 2007 in Montebello by a photograph of a demonstrator who was being taken down by the police, and his boots, the soles of his boots were visible, were brand-new military-type boots with leg soles with a big yellow medallion rubber label in the insole, which was typical of his boots. But what was interesting is the soldiers who was holding him down, their boots were also showing as they were on their knees, and they were the exact same boots. The demonstrators that were taken down were wearing the same footwear, standard issue of the Montreal police.
And, Chris, this is the technique of the agent provocateur. You have a group of peaceful demonstrators. You have the agent provocateurs, government agents assigned there, are usually wearing, you know, a black mask or black leotards or something like that. And they begin burning cars. They begin breaking windows. They create an incident, so then you could justify the police moving against them. Ladies and gentlemen, these are standard techniques, exactly what happened in the battle in Seattle. And we have a great four-tape set that discusses exactly how they orchestrated that, and the very people who were saying, oh my goodness, these terrible demonstrators, were the people who were financing the agent provocateurs that were doing the damage and committing the acts of terrorism, and certainly burning buildings and things of that sort. Standard operating technique, and the American people haven't caught on to it yet. But go right ahead.
Well, let's move on to the nomination of Elena Kagan. I don't think we've seen ever someone so disingenuous before the microphones and so much incompetence in terms of the senators in properly grilling this woman. Everyone is so obsequious to try to, you know, not offend a person who's both a Jew and a woman that gives her double immunity against criticism. Washington Post is gloating about how Kagan has charmed everyone, evading any embarrassing gaffes. Others are decrying the vacuous grandstanding by various senators pontificating about their own agenda rather than grilling her as they should be to embarrass her about her answers. And they let her off the hook so easily. It's so easy. I mean, even though they have made a point, I'm not going to tell how I would rule in a certain case, you can ask them, and it's a legitimate question, how do you interpret these aspects of the Constitution to get them to commit themselves to a certain type of interpretation? But even Kagan was prepared for that, because she was actually prepared to lie And she did lie. During the second full day of questioning before the Judiciary Committee, Kagan said she disavowed President Barack Obama's statement about employing empathy in judging people. That's considered an activist judge. A conservative judge will not let his empathy for the clients or for the victims change. He will only rule according to the original intent of the Constitution. And here she is, starting to claim that she's in line with Justice Antonin Scalia in endorsing originalism. That method, of course, emphasizes what the authors of the U.S. Constitution consider to be their original intent. She said this: sometimes they lay down very specific rules, sometimes they lay down broad principles. Either way, we apply what they try to do. In a way, we are all originalists. Just a bold-faced lie, Dr. Stan. There's really no way to counter that unless the person can say you are lying, and you have the evidence to prove you're lying.
Well, I think that the thing is, there are a number of Jewish rabbis, very conservative Jewish rabbis, who have come out publicly against this woman and saying she may be Jewish, but she doesn't represent us. She's on the wrong side for homosexuality issues. She's the wrong side as far as abortion issues. This woman is not fit to be the Supreme Court Justice. These are Jewish rabbis. You're not going to read about that in your newspapers. A lot of Jewish people very upset that they would pick a woman who is obviously a homosexual, who is against the military, who's against our Constitution, who has her own agenda. But then why should we be surprised that Barack Obama would pick this sort of a person to become the Supreme Court Justice? Well, Joel, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Judge Robert Bork himself, a Supreme Court nominee, blasted Kagan for one quote that she found that was just devastating, proving that she is pro-judicial activism. Apparently, in 2006, Kagan gave a special award at Harvard Law School to retired Chief Judge of the Israeli Supreme Court, Aaron Barak. She said, he is the judge who has most advanced democracy, human rights, the rule of law, and justice. But in fact, he had a reputation for being the most activist judge in Israel. Bork said, in fact, he was extravagantly activist. And he said, if Kagan is confirmed, we will have a court which is much more to the left than what we have today. And it's just barely making some good decisions today. One of those decisions, of course, was to defend and uphold the Second Amendment as applying to the states, applying the 14th Amendment substantive due process and privileges and immunity clause to the Second Amendment. Heretofore, they were kind of picking and choosing of which parts of the Bill of Rights they would allow to be applied to the states under the Second Amendment, which was passed after the Civil War. But now it's very, very clear. She even lied before the Senate committee saying that the ruling in Heller, first ruling establishing the right to bear arms as an individual right rather than a militia right, that it was settled law, implying that she would not vote to overturn it. I just don't believe her. I think that she will work to overturn it. I think she'll vote every time she can against this rule of law. And so this is very, very difficult to fight against.
Well, it's very, very difficult to fight against when the United States senators, who have an obligation to the American people to make sure that you do not put an activist judge on the Supreme Court, that one will go against the original intent of the Constitution, will try to use judicial activism to alter the nation we live in, to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. And when the senators won't stand up, why, of course, what can we do? Well, we can be sure that most of those senators do not get reelected, and this is what we have to do. And most of the congressmen shouldn't be reelected either, especially those who are voting to give more power to the Federal Reserve System, so that we can simply have an autocratic banking system run by a small number of banks that are going to just simply close down all the smaller banks and centralize all financial power with the ruling elite. Our guest has been Joel Scouse. And Joel, it's always a pleasure, and we will be talking to you, I guess, next week.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Stan. Good to be with you.
Good night. God bless. Okay, fine. That was, of course, Joel Scouse of World Affairs Brief. Mail. This is Dr. Stan, and certainly we hope that you enjoy the program with Joel Skousen. If you'd like to get his books, they are available. You can call 1-800-544-8927. Ladies and gentlemen, we're moving into a very difficult time. We're going to be seeing increasing civil unrest and violence in our cities. There are terrorist training camps in this country, Islamic terrorist training camps. If you haven't heard my interviews with Paul Williams, why you need to get them. And of course, he will be the special guest, one of the guests, at our October 17th conference, all-day conference here in Monterey, North Shore, Monterey Bay. So if you'd like to come, well, you're going to have reservations. We serve lunch, and you may want to get the hotel reservations. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927 for the all-day conference here, the Radio Liberty Conference, and Paul Williams, who is the world's leading expert on the Islamic training camps in our country, and the FBI knows about them. In fact, they're being financed by probably the CIA or other branches of government, where they're taking people out of our prisons, blacks, converting them to radical form of Islam, taking them to Pakistan for training, bringing them back in the United States, where they're prepared for when the word is given. And, of course, the same thing is happening. There are many, many people out there who are victims of mind control, who've been programmed to react when they, of course, they're programmed to react and when they're triggered. And that is another factor. And if you haven't heard our four-tape set on the Black Awakening, you need to get that, the four-tape set on the Black Awakening. Well, Sydney, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you'd like to, of course, to help Radio Liberty, why, you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or certainly get some of our products. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. How do you understand what's going on today? Well, you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And it will give you insight. We talk there about Edward Bellamy's book, written in 1888, where Bellamy said, you know, by the year 2000, a credit card will be just as good in Europe as gold is today. That's what, 120 years ago. They knew all about credit cards then. It was all planned ahead of time. Everything's planned. And, of course, at that time, there was just one great corporation, and that's exactly what the new financial bill is, gradually to remove all competition and centralize all power in the hands of just a few very powerful people. We have a central bank. And that central bank is owned by a few large banks, and they, of course, direct the policies of the financial policies of the United States. And they're aimed at, of course, destroying the sovereignty of our nation, merging us into a one-world government, and impoverishing the American people. And they're the ones primarily behind this whole fraudulent environmental movement and global warming and the whole idea of sustainable development. They know what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. If you want to know more about sustainable development, well, you need to get my sustainable development syllabus and my talk on sustainable development, the road to world government. If you doubt that they intend to kill off most of the people in the world, and that sounds so ridiculous, then why are we going to war with Iran, ladies and gentlemen? Why are we really going to war with Iran? Because if you go back to 1979, it was the CIA that installed the Ayatollahs. In fact, they even flew Ayatollah Khomeini from Paris to Tehran to install him back in 1979. And the hostage crisis was as phony as a $3 bill. But you'll never hear that mentioned by the controlled media. And ever since 1979, we've been leading up to where we are today, to the point where very soon, I fear, the United States is going to war with Iran. And where is the outcry? Where is the outcry from the American people saying, we don't want another war? And we ought to bring our troops home from Afghanistan and Iraq. Oh, we can't do that. We've got to have them over there. Al-Qaeda, all 100 members of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan are plotting against America. That's why we have almost 200,000 people there to counter them. Please pray for America. We'll be back in just a moment for the next hour.